Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Peter Paul Barzola on November 21st. It's a very interesting day in history, and it may be a day to remember, considering the politics that are going on in Washington. It's very interesting. One of the events in history on November 21st in 1922, I believe, the first... I guess they still want to go to the scaffold, and some people should go, some politicians and some media people, as well as the poverty pimps and the voter fraud artists. Anyway, on this day, in November 21st, in the state of Georgia, the governor appointed a woman, Rebecca Felton, to the U.S. Senate, and she was the first woman to serve in the U.S. Senate, and she only served 24 hours. Wouldn't that be great if we could get rid of some of our people that way, cut short their term? What had happened was somebody died, and there was a representative, the senator died, and so she was appointed to fill his that vacancy, and she decided not to run for the vacancy in the seat in her own right, and so somebody was elected, and so she just went quietly in retirement. I think she died in 1940. She was very interested in agriculture and women's rights. So that's something you probably never heard about, Rebecca Felton, the first woman in the U.S. Senate, and she had the shortest term of any U.S. senator, 1 day, 24 hours. And today in 1620, as we're close to Thanksgiving, although some Native American historical advocates don't like the Thanksgiving holiday, we had the Mayflower Compact was signed. And, of course, Cole Porter, the great one of America's greatest composers and musicians, interesting man, he served in World War One. There's a famous movie, although it plays down Cole Porter's homosexuality and his buddy, his sidekick, the professor Monty Woolley, who plays himself in the movie Night and Day, starring Cary Grant and Alexis Smith. It's a mid-40s film, and I highly recommend it. A lot of great music, and you see Mary Martin doing My Heart Belongs to Daddy. I'm sure there are a lot of politicians in Washington and lobbyists who are singing that song. And, of course, on this day, in I think it was 1934, Cole Porter debuted his show Anything Goes, and that song is the theme song of San Francisco politicians and media, and the unofficial song of the city. It isn't I Left My Heart in San Francisco. It's Anything Goes in San Francisco. Also, interesting birthdays today. Voltaire, the great French philosopher. Harpo Marx. Stan of the Marx Brothers. Stan Musial, the great St. Louis Cardinal baseball player. Goldie Hawn, the actress. Marlo Thomas, the daughter of... Danny Thomas, and the wife, I think, or domestic partner of, that Irishman, sorry, and Muriel Hemingway, who was born in Mill Valley. Among the interesting deaths in gay history or homosexual history is Quentin Crisp, who was a bit of a really extreme fop Englishman, and I think he died about several years ago. Among the other deaths are Henry Purcell, the great, and probably the first great English classical composer. And then we have in politics Florence Harding, the wife of President Warren G. Harding, who was, again, America's first president that we know of with African heritage. And we got into that last week. And then, of course, we have humorist Robert Benchley, the Birdman of Alcatraz, Robert Stroud, and there's some revisionist history on him, that he was really quite a problem over there in Alcatraz. and that movie starring Burt Lancaster was Hollywood fiction, history according to Hollywood's fiction. And then a case that I was involved in, or a media thing that I did when I was a correspondent in New Zealand, we have the Birdman of Perry Prison. Back in the 80s, I was trying to persuade the California Department of Corrections to allow birds and fish as a means also not only of reducing stress and tension in the prison system, but also as a means of social control. And they pioneered this in Australia and New Zealand, I think New Zealand, at Perry Prison, which was comparable to Alcatraz and San Quentin here in the States. And the prison demographic of New Zealand is very similar to the prison demographic here in the States, where Maoris are the they were the original indigenous people, but they comprise, I think, over 50% of their prison population. And Perry Prison, outside of Auckland, New Zealand, is the principal prison down there. And I was permitted as the first journalist to go in and do interviews with the Birdman of Perry Prison. And so we have a picture of him. We'll put up on the web, and we'll be running some more excerpts from the archives that was produced for Western Public Radio and KLW, the San Francisco Unified School District, and the Verzola Carson Archives. Let's see, what else happened today? Excuse me. Oh, yes, the first successful balloon flight back in 1620. And I think it's kind of interesting, 1783, it's Marquis de Rosière, first free flight in a balloon. He went up to 3,000 feet, I think that's less than that character in Colorado, and it was he went 5.5 miles in 20 minutes. So, that guy and his wife in Colorado, who incidentally is not an American citizen, the wife isn't, and she didn't want to be deported back to Japan, even though she has probably American-born kids. I don't know all of the history of that family. But I wonder if they were aware of this, the first balloon flight like this. And then we have, 1934 was the correct date for the premiere of the show, Anything Goes. And let's see what else. And then, unfortunately, tomorrow, and those of us who were around in 1963, this was the last day that John F. Kennedy was alive, the last complete day, in November of 21st of 1963. And those of us who remember that weekend, and I think it happened on a Friday, and I remember coming in from my job, coming in from the field, and someone said, "The president has been shot, probably killed." And we all said, "Nah, you're kidding." But it was true, and Lyndon Johnson gave all the federal employees, and I was one at the time, the weekend off, and then it was a period of national mourning. And that's probably the Kennedy assassination is probably the most controversial and unsolved, in some people's minds, political assassination in U.S. history. James Garfield, whose birthday was last week, he was also assassinated, and we had William McKinley, and, of course, the Kennedy. And God forbid that we should have another even attempt. It'll so disrupt this country, and we don't need to do what they do in other countries when they want to get rid of a president. Now, also on this date, because of all of the deaths involved, and we will be playing that excerpt and interview with the only interview he did with Colonel Trevor Hodges. He was a captain or second lieutenant in the British Guards in World War One, served at Gallipoli. He was ill and taken out on the Britannic, which was a sister ship of the Titanic, and I think was hit by a minor torpedo, but he survived, and then also served on the Somme, which was the bloodiest. The British lost more men on the Somme than any other. The Crimean War, which they lost a lot of men because of sickness, and Florence Nightingale established the nursing corps in effect because of that war, because of the horrible conditions in the hospital and treating military personnel who were injured or ill or because of the environment and the unsanitary conditions that the hospitals, or field hospitals, were in during that time. Of course, we had Clara Barton in the American Civil War about 10 years later, who in effect established the American Medical Nursing Corps for the military. We'll get into her and give her credit. But this day in 1916, the third longest ruler or emperor, Franz Joseph of the Habsburg family, he died, and he came to the throne because of abdications. He came to the Austro-Hungarian throne, and it was called the Double Crown. When the Emperor of Austria was crowned in Vienna, he also had to go to Budapest to be crowned, and they called that the Double Crown, and you hear Austria-Hungary. Of course, that was broken up after the end of World War I. But at the age of 18, he became Emperor of Austria and Austria-Hungary, and all those countries we hear about today in the Balkans, Bosnia-Herzegovina, that whole territory, Trieste, which is also the Navy base, was the Navy base for Austria because they're landlocked. But he lasted 68 years. He died at calling on God to save the monarchy, but it fell apart or was dissolved at the end of this disastrous war. And, of course, in 1914, we had his nephew, who was to succeed him, and who was going to modernize the archaic Austrian system, was assassinated in Sarajevo. So these are names which people are familiar with, or should be, because we're still in the Balkans today. And as Winston Churchill often said, there's always trouble in those damn Balkans. So that's an important day today. Let's see, there was something else I wanted to bring up, and we're trying this new longer format on Saturday and to repeat the interviews during the week that some people don't get a chance to listen to on the weekend, so we're going to try this. But I'm going to now play, again, the excerpt from Brigadier Ingle, Trevor Hodges, who talks about his experience at the Battle of the Somme in July 1916. In World War One.
Trevor, when you were in Trevor, when you were in France on the Somme in World War One, did anything happen with animals that you can recall?
Yes, a very dreadful thing. Whether it was in 16 or early 17, I don't know. But my little unit, smoke unit, was out of the trenches resting. And I was awakened before dawn by a clickety-clank sound. And I looked out of my tent, and there was cavalry going up towards the front line. Well, they got slaughtered. They got through the first lot of barbed wire, which had been pretty well blasted by the artillery. But the artillery hadn't done enough job on the second load, and they got all tangled up, and those beautiful horses were slaughtered right and left. Thank God I didn't actually see it. But all I know is that for 2 months after that, the whole British Army ate horse meat.
I guess that beats bully beef.
I'm not so sure.
When did they stop using horses during World War One? When the tanks came in?
The first tank was a failure because they ran the tanks when there were just about 8 or 9 of them. And of course they got right through the German lines, but then were blasted to hell. If they'd only waited until they had 200 or 300 tanks, They could have ended the war right then. Right then.
This was on the Somme?
No, further down the line, Flers, F-L-E-R-S. The infantry walked behind the tanks, but there weren't enough tanks, and the breach wasn't wide enough. If they had a large number of tanks, they could have spread out behind the German lines and...
enveloped them.
Yes, that's right.
Any more interesting animal stories that
no,
you...
No, that's the end of the story.
That was Trevor Hodges. Now, interestingly, tomorrow, November 22nd, is the birthday of Charles de Gaulle, famous general who didn't wear all of his emblems of rank. It's very interesting. If you look at him wearing his kepi, you see one star. Famous family, de Gaulle was believed to be a descendant of what they called the Wild Geese. These were the Catholic Irishmen who had fought in wars, and they fled to France. In fact, one after Louis Napoleon, back in, I think it was the mid-1850, after the Civil War, he tried to set up a French protectorate or dependency in Mexico with the brother of Franz Ferdinand, a guy named Archduke Maximilian. And there's a famous movie with Brian Ahern, what's her name, Betty Davis, and Paul Muni, who plays Benito Juarez, who was mestizo, a very dark Indian, who incidentally is connected to the Steve Neri case. His great-nephew, Raul Vicente Almazan, a great lawyer, a retired lawyer, Army lawyer in World War II, was a descendant of Benito Juarez. What had happened was, well, you have to understand the history of Spanish colonization in the Americas and in Asia. Mexico City was the administrative center for the Spanish Empire, colonial empire in the Americas and in the Pacific, the Philippines in particular. And so if there was a problem in the Philippines, it had to go through Mexico City. And in those days, they didn't have airplanes and supersonic flight. And then it may have taken 3 or 4 months to get, or maybe 6 months, to get to Madrid, and then they'd fool around before a decision was made, and then have to go back through Mexico and then back to the Philippines. Now, in one of the political facts and what I call fiction, I've got to adjust this new equipment, thanks, was the fact that the Filipinos, Magellan, led the exploration and discovered the Philippines for the Spanish crowning, and I won't say conquered it, but claimed it. And he was killed and eaten. And what happened was, when the Spanish colonized the Philippines about 300 years until 1898, Spanish-American War, Filipinos, young Filipinos, were impressed upon for the Spanish galleons, and the Spanish abused these young Filipinos. So when the Filipinos were on these ships serving under extreme conditions and brutal and harsh discipline, first land that they saw, they jumped ship. And they are believed to have been the first Asians who have jumped in the Gulf of Mexico in places like Texas and probably Mississippi, all those states along the Gulf there. As a matter of fact, one of the interesting things of our history in the wine industry is that everybody thinks that California is the was the start of the wine industry in North America. It wasn't. It was Texas, and the Spanish friars who accompanied the conquistadores would come up with the Spanish conquistadores and, you know, waving the cross and all of that, and to convert, quote, the heathen Indians to Roman Catholicism, and the brutal conditions that these Indians served worked under. They started the vineyards in Texas, and it's quite interesting. Texas wine is pretty good, I must say. It doesn't taste like cactus juice. Also, Mexico has some interesting wines from on the Pacific coast there. I've had some of them, Santo Tomas, And so, you know, if you want to take an adventure and get away from California wines or what they call those foxy wines from upstate New York and eastern Canada, try some Texas wines. And also Virginia. So it's I happen to be born on the feast day of the patron saint of winemakers, so I'm kind of biased. I've been drinking my way around the world for years. But anyway, that's just a little aside. But what had happened was, the interesting thing is, the Louis Napoleon was the nephew of the great Napoleon Bonaparte, and he thought that he was his military equal. He led France into disastrous wars, and one of them was this adventure in Mexico, and the United States at the time was during our Civil War. All of our troops were, the northern troops were fighting with the Confederacy, and, you know, Washington couldn't deal with this violation of the so-called Monroe Doctrine, which told the Europeans, stay out, you know, stay out of, don't interfere and try to recolonize or colonize places in North America where you weren't before the United States became a country. So after the Civil War, the North could turn its resources, military resources, to ousting the French, who were backing Archduke Maximiliano, or Maximilian, who set himself up as the Emperor of Mexico. And so when the French army withdrew, he was left with his Mexican army supporters. And there is a famous movie called Juarez, with Paul Muni played Benito Juarez. And Paul Muni, here's another aside, Paul Muni is the uncle of the conductor of the San Francisco Symphony. All that family came out of the Yiddish theater in New York. And Michael Tilson Thomas, who is, when he's not in the music business, he's been involved in gay politics. But anyway, that's his uncle, and Paul Muni starred in several great historical films. Getting back to the South, I'm an escapee from a chain gang, which exposed the horrible chain gang system down in the South, how not only blacks were abused, but poor whites were abused on a chain gang system. Incidentally, Rebecca Felton was the last slave owner to serve in the U.S. Congress, even though it was for 24 hours. So that's her claim, thing in history. The other thing, Maximiliano was captured, and his some generals with him, in that famous movie Juarez. I recommend it. It's pretty accurate. And then Betty Davis played the Empress Carlotta. She went to Europe to try to stir up support for her husband. And even his brother, the Emperor Franz Joseph, wouldn't send an Austrian army to Mexico to aid him and to prop up his throne. But the Habsburg family had a lot of problems over the 900 years of what somebody called 900 years of incest, because there was so much intermarriage within the Habsburgs. And, we'll get into that another day. But I'd recommend that movie. The other thing is, I do not understand, and people have tried to get this information from our representative, Lucretia Borgia of the U.S. Congress, Madam Nancy Pelosi. First it was over a 1,000-page bill, now it's over 2,000 pages, and, you know, as the congressman from Detroit, I forgot his name, the black congressman, who said, we don't read these things, we don't have time to. So I don't know if they did this on purpose or what, but people are asking these questions. Are people with AIDS or communicable diseases who are gay, lesbian, or NAMBLA, are they going to be allowed in the United States to get medical care under the Pelosi Reed Care? The second question is, again, what about these transgender or sexual gender operations? Is that covered, or is that an elective under Pelosi Reed Care? The third thing is, and this is really wacko, there are extreme homosexual activists who were circumcised at birth, and there's this movement among, it's essentially a minority movement from best that I can tell, called Foreskin Restoral. Is that going to be covered, or is it in that 2,000-page bill? You know, or is that an elective or what? So all these questions need to be answered. And also the people, everybody who has the elective or the option on your automobile insurance policy is the medical payments clause on your automobile policies. Is that going to be affected in any way with this Pelosi Reed, what's his name, the Dunkin' Donut senator from Illinois? Is that going to be affected? None of these questions have been addressed, and I am really surprised that these people in the media who pull down millions of dollars, some of them, don't ask that question. I think NPR addressed it once, very briefly. The Chronicle talked about these community health care clinics. I mean, as Senator Everett Dirksen said, the late senator from Illinois, he had a great voice. It was like somebody described it as the depths of an oil can. He said, a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money. And that's one of his quotes when he was talking about Medicare, because he was a senator who helped Lyndon Johnson pass it. But these are questions that need to be addressed. And, you know, if this thing, if they succeed in ramming it through by Christmas or after the first session in the new year, it's going to be very difficult unless the courts overturn it, which I think they've set themselves up for a reversal, unconstitutionality of this measure, forcing people to get health insurance. It's not like they're driving a car. So who are they harming when they don't have health insurance, and isn't that a right to get it? Now, I have talked about this several times, the community health care clinics. There's a whole lobbyist group in Washington. There's a whole network, and there's an estimated 6,000 of these clinics across the United States and its possessions. And there's over $9 to $12 billion budgeted for this. Also, veterans are asking questions, how are they going to be affected by this? And I came across something. We were out walking the dogs, and there was a guy there and with a southern accent, and he was talking about his father had been in Vietnam, and he's about 30-something, had come down with cancer, brain cancer, and he was recovering from that. And he attributed, he's part of a cancer support group, he attributed his cancer to his father had gotten cancer from Agent Orange in Vietnam. So apparently there may be a lot of young middle-aged people out there, men and women, who are the children of Vietnam vets, who were exposed to Agent Orange and maybe some other things while they were fighting in Vietnam or serving in Vietnam. So how are they going to be taken care of? They need to be taken care of. This guy had a brain operation, and he's trying to survive and trying to take every day as it comes, and he's not the only one. So these are questions that haven't been addressed by these sleazy politicians, and I think I'll end with this is very appropriate.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the clap?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, better.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play,
not to
poker? Which is more important?
Parrot race.
This is Peter Paul Brazilla. Thanks for listening. Okay. Okay. Let's see what we do. Mm-hmm.